Okay. We're talking about going out into the world and preaching the gospel, sharing Jesus with other people. Okay. And so far, we've focused really on two main principles of Jesus here that are really an important key or foundation to everything else that we're going to be talking about in this series of lessons. The first thing that we talked about, lesson number one, we focused on the vision that God had for saving those who were lost. That vision, what are some of the things, just real quickly review, what are some of the things you remember about that part of our study that and the reason I'm doing this is because to remind us over and over again, what are the things we've got to remember? In order to have the vision Jesus did, what are some of the key things here that we've got to remember? Okay? With the idea really between a world vision and a spiritual vision, right? If we have a worldly vision, then we're going to look on the outside, aren't we? We're going to look at how people, what they look like, in other words, and perhaps even, you know, we look at the things that they're doing, and we make a judgment then on whether or not that person is worthy of us to spend time in teaching them the gospel, or whether they're a good candidate for conversion and all of those other things. If we're looking at them from a spiritual perspective, what do we see?
Soul.
We see a soul that is
lost.
You see? Doesn't matter, you know, what color of skin they have. Doesn't matter what their background is. Doesn't matter how much money they have or don't have. Doesn't matter any of those things. They're a soul that needs saving. John? Okay. Right. Exactly. So if we have that world vision, then that's exactly how we're going to we're going to have it. If we have a spiritual vision, then it doesn't matter. We're gonna at least try. We're gonna go and talk to them. We're gonna find out what do you want to do here. You see, if they choose not to buy, then fine. But at least we have made ourselves available to teach them and so forth. So we have this vision needs to be a foundation, a vision for the lost, that people are lost and they need to be saved. Bottom line, okay? Then the second important factor we talked about in lesson number two was what? Anybody recall? A compulsion, okay? A compulsion to share the word. God, we saw there, had a compulsion to save His creation. Okay, and when we share that same compulsion, then not only do we recognize that people are lost, but what do? If we're compelled, then we're going to do something about it, aren't we? We're going to act on that, right? You see, and that's the key to it. Do we see people as lost, and do we feel compelled to do something about it? Those are the two foundational keys that we've got to really set everything else on. You say, how are we looking at people? You say, and do we feel this compulsion to share the gospel with other people? You see, that is to do the work that God gave us to do to save His creation. All right. So vision and compulsion. Now, if you look on your lesson on the front page of your lesson study here. Under the statement section there, the middle paragraph, in the midst of a hardened and deceived nation, the disciples of Jesus began to fulfill the vision and compulsion of their master. Okay, that's what we're talking about here, all right? They met together, they preached together, they stood together, they shared together, they suffered together to fill their city with the gospel and to reach beyond Jerusalem unto the uttermost parts of the earth, into all the world. Now, do we have that same vision and compulsion? Okay, look at the next paragraph in here. All right, and let's look at these two paragraphs in terms of us today. Okay? In the midst of, to go back to the first paragraph I just read, in the midst of a hardened and deceived nation, does that apply to us today? I think that describes America today, doesn't it? Okay? All right, so into all the world for me begins where? Okay? Yeah, you see, it's not just back there 2,000 years ago in Jerusalem. It's not just what we read about in the book of Acts. It needs to be for us today in my city, in my neighborhood, in my, at the very least, in my family. You see, because in all of those situations, we have people who are lost. You see? So what kind of a vision and a compulsion do we have when it comes to that? The statement that is made here, you know, it begins in for me in this city, among all the friends and neighbors, students and teachers, employees and employers that make up, and I like the way that he uses this term here, my Jerusalem. See? And maybe that's how we need to start looking at it. See, that Jesus sent the disciples from Jerusalem, right? Okay? And he said to them, you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. So it starts in Jerusalem. Okay? So perhaps maybe it would help us if we would look at our situation, whether it's work or our neighbors or wherever, this is my Jerusalem. This is where I need to start. See? Because I think perhaps sometimes it's easy for us to be overwhelmed, even if we look at it and say, well, let's talk about the whole city of Petersburg. Okay? Well, then we start going, yeah, but. And that's where sometimes that world vision, that worldly vision starts coming in and so forth. Okay, well, let's forget about the city of Petersburg right now. Let's forget about Dinwiddie County right now. From the perspective of saying, you know, the whole, let's just look at it in terms of what my Jerusalem is. What's your Jerusalem and your Jerusalem and your Jerusalem and your Jerusalem? What is your Jerusalem? Whether it's the people that you work with, it's your neighbors, it's whoever. The people that you start out with, that's the key. Because what was it that Jesus did to begin with? He told them, you start right here in the city. You say, hey, that's where you begin. Why there? Why in Jerusalem? Yeah, that's where they were from, most of them, you see. That's, they knew people there, you see. They had connections. So you start there, and then you branch out. And so if we do the same thing, if we look at it in terms of what is my Jerusalem, you see, whether it's family, whether it's neighbors, whether it's co-workers, whoever it is, that's my Jerusalem. So I think one of the first things that we have to do individually, if we're going to really have the vision and the compulsion, you say, to do this, then we have to identify what our Jerusalem is. Okay? Three, in our first lesson, I started to say 3 weeks ago, but it's been longer than 3 weeks because we spent more than 1 week on each lesson. But whenever that was, okay, several weeks ago, the end of lesson one, one of the things that we had on there was for us to write down the names of three people, say, that we know that need to hear the gospel. Okay? That, I would suggest to you, is the beginning of your Jerusalem. See? That's the start. That's a place to start. See? And so then the question from there becomes, all right, what are you doing in your Jerusalem? See? If you just focus on those three people, okay? And you look at it from the perspective of the vision and the compulsion. Okay? That's your Jerusalem, where you can and need to start. Okay. Right?
It's changing just something. One of the names he had mentioned, I use the word, but, you know, Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times we don't have enough confidence in our own ability. And we, what we need to do is let God guide our heart and our thoughts using His Word. And that's what we have to do.
Exactly.
And the question is,
yeah. And we're going to talk about that more in our worship lesson this morning. Two of those are connected this morning to that. We're going to be talking about praying for non-Christians, relationships with non-Christians. But you're exactly right. You know. But you see, when we have, you know, the vision and we have the compulsion, what does that do to the excuses? You see? All right. If I don't know enough, what am I going to do? I'm going to study. I'm going to learn enough, okay? And I'm going to learn to ask the Father to guide me and give me His Spirit to help me and, you know, what I need to do to properly equip me. And again, we'll talk about more of that aspect of it in our worship lesson this morning. But, you know, this is the foundation here that we've got to get straight, isn't it? You see? Have a vision and a compulsion, and then we need to identify our Jerusalem. Okay? And our Jerusalem doesn't have to be what is the population of Petersburg?
37,000
people. It doesn't have to be the 37,000 people in Petersburg, and I go, you know, what can I do with them? Well, you know three people. Okay, start with them. And just identify that as your Jerusalem. You see, here's the thing. How many people we got in here? John, give me a count real quick. How many people we got in this room? Let's do some math. I'm going to call upon Jean since she didn't do her other homework this morning. Okay? 28 people. Okay, if every one of us in here, 28 people, just focused on one of those three people and we brought that one person to Christ, how many would we have? 56 people. We have double the amount of people. Hey, you know what? We might even have to move this Bible class up there. You see? That's just one. You see? We're not talking about the 37,000 in Petersburg. You see? Do what?
I said you'll even be the same more. No, some of them will tend to be here.
All right, but just start with the one or two or three that you know. You see? Now, what can happen? You know, if every one of us starts with one and we work on that one and then we get another one and, you know, you see this multiplying, right? Well, you know, eventually we've got the gospel being taught throughout the whole city of Petersburg, right? But you got a whole lot more people helping. How many people were saved on the day of Pentecost? 3,000 just that day. Okay. But it's got to start with each of us identifying our Jerusalem. Okay. And then once we get working on our Jerusalem, then we spread out to Judea and Samaria, you see, and the ends of the earth. But if we don't ever get started in Jerusalem, then it's never going to get outside the city. Okay? And that's the part that we've got to keep in mind. Now, take a look down here at the bottom of this section. How many of you... No, I'm not going to embarrass you. Okay, I was going to ask how many of you read Acts 1 through 5. You know, if you scan through there, okay... What are some of the references to the amount of growth that was taking place in the first century church, in the early days and weeks and months of the first century church? What are some of the references that we find in there? In Acts chapter 1 and verse 15, how many people were meeting together in that upper room? About 120. Okay? So we're not talking about just the 12, are we? You see? We're talking about already 120 folks here. Okay? And then we already mentioned chapter 2 and verse 41, how many were baptized on the day of Pentecost? 3,000. Okay. Verse 47 of chapter 2, what does it tell us there? The Lord added to their number daily. Daily, those who were being saved. Okay. Chapter 4 and verse 4. Number of men grew to about 5,000. Okay? So this thing is happening more and more. Chapter 5 and verse 14.
Multitude.
Okay? Okay, more and more men and women were being added to their number. So we see this continuing to go on. Okay, we cheated a little bit here. Go over to chapter 6 and verse 7. They multiplied greatly, including what? A great many of the priests, you see. So they're even reaching into the religious leaders, you see, of the Jews. And people are sharing the gospel, and they are, and people are obeying the gospel. See? Now this is just in Jerusalem. This is just at the beginning here. Okay, that the disciples are going out and they're spreading the gospel. They're teaching. They're telling people and so forth. how did they go about doing this? Look at the second question under there. What are the possible explanations for such phenomenal growth? And then we have on here, he's got Acts chapter 5 and verse 28. Let's look at a couple of statements here that indicate what was going on. How did this growth take place? What does chapter 5 and verse 38 tell us they were doing? Okay. They were they filled Jerusalem with what? With the doctrine or the teaching, right? That's what they were doing. They were filling Jerusalem with the teaching of Jesus. Okay, so your Jerusalem. Think about your Jerusalem. What do we identify that as? Your three people or your neighborhood, your coworkers, your Jerusalem, whatever that is. What would happen, do you suppose, if you filled it with the doctrine or the teachings about Jesus? Okay? What would happen there? How about verse 42? Okay. How often did they do it?
Daily.
Day to day, in the temple courts, and from house to house, they never stopped teaching. See? You think they had a vision and a compulsion? See? They were filling their Jerusalem with the gospel. Okay? Go back to chapter 4 and verse 29. Now, Peter and John have been dragged before the Sanhedrin. They've been threatened with not spreading this word around anymore, and so forth. And they come back after they're released and they get with all of the brethren and tell them what had happened. And what's verse 29 tell us? This prayer that they're offering, what does it say here? Yeah. Yeah. What does that do to the thing you brought up here a little while ago, you say? I don't know enough, you say, or what have you. What did they do? They prayed for boldness, you see? Look at it here. Lord, consider their threats and enable your servants to speak your word with great boldness. And yet I think, unfortunately, too many today are considering the threats, you know, that we face from neighbors or family or friends or co-workers or whoever, and we're just shutting up. See? We're just shutting up. What we need to do is be committed and say, not my Jerusalem. Not my Jerusalem, do you?
Well, I think this shutting up because people don't want to hear is also one of the reasons why we're in the predicament that we're in now.
I think
that
so.
We are being told, you know, you can't pray, you can't even mention the Lord's name anymore in certain circles. And it's because we have adopted this.
Yep.
We're going to shut up. We don't want to offend nobody. Yep. That we are in the situation that we are in now.
Exactly. Because we've been quiet too long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When all this began in Jerusalem, okay, what was the condition that existed, the atmosphere, if you will, concerning the government and other religious groups and so forth? What was the atmosphere that these Christians spread the gospel in? To say the least, wasn't it? You know? They're going against the government, okay? The Roman government. I mean, you know, that was the pretense under which Jesus was crucified, because he claimed to be a king, allowed the Romans to crucify him. But not only that, but what else? Who else was hostile towards him? The Jews. The other religious group in the area, right? You see? Tried to stomp this thing out. Now, they weren't just threatened with losing their jobs or having family members not speak to them anymore or things of that nature. What were they threatened with?
Death.
Their lives, okay? Do what? Yeah. You know, physical torture, all kinds of brutality. But yet, when you look at that environment, okay, you look at these statements that are made, this is the time in history when the church grew most rapidly. Okay. So what does that tell us about the atmosphere that we need in order for the church to grow? Okay. Do we need to have a favorable government towards Christianity? No. Do we need to have neighbors who are favorable toward Christianity? Bosses, co-workers? Okay. What do we need to have? Vision and a compulsion. Have boldness to carry those out, you see?
Well, I think if you have that mission and boldness, which the disciples actually irradiated out from them, you're going to draw the people that seek the Lord.
Yeah.
They see the difference in you, and they see your conviction. I think it's because of your own conviction.
Yeah.
That you're going to be able to teach. Not so much of how much you know, but your conviction, and to let the people know that it's there, and the reason why you feel the way you do, why you cling to the Lord the way you do, that already in and of itself will draw the people.
Yeah.
Share your story with them.
Exactly. You see, I don't know this for a fact. This we'll put this under the category of, you know, speculation. Okay, this comes from the Book of Rush. Okay, I can't prove this. There's nothing written down somewhere that says, but I'm convinced. I believe that probably the one statement with something like this that was used more than any other statement, say, by the first century Christians as they were spreading the gospel around, probably went something like this. Do you know who Jesus is? Let me tell you what He's done for me. Something along that line, I think, is probably the statement that carried the gospel to more places in those days than anything else. It wasn't, you know, do you believe in instrumental music, you say. It wasn't all those other issues that we have, you know, or you know, when in your synagogue over there, do y'all clap, you know, when you're singing, and so, you know, none of those kinds of things. It was, have you heard of Jesus? Let me tell you what He's done for me. The people witnessing about Jesus.
Well, isn't that what Paul did?
Yeah.
You know, he told the people right now, this is what I used to do.
Yeah.
I imprisoned Christians. I persecuted them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what the Lord did for me
yeah.
when He met me in the way. You
exactly.
know, and He tells the story.
Yeah.
And it's convincing. It shows people, first of all, that you are no different from them, that you were just as lost as they are.
Yeah.
But yet, Jesus still found a way to draw you through that, and you have the same opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main thing we need to be teaching anyway.
Tell your story, John. Exactly. That was, as you're talking about it, I'm thinking, you know, why did that resonate so much in that kind of an environment? Because it was personal. You see, go back 2,000 years ago, and we may dress differently, and we drive cars, and you know, we work in big offices and all of those kinds of things, but do you really think that the problems that we have today were are really that much basically different than the problems that people had back then 2,000 years ago? No, they weren't very much different. You see, they still had to worry about death and taxes just like we do. You see? And all the other things that come, you know, in there with it. It just looks a little bit different. But basically it's the same stuff. Problems in their homes, with their marriages, problems with their kids, problems at their work, with their boss. You know, I mean, just name it. What are the stuff that we got going on? Same stuff. And you start addressing where people are. Okay. That cuts through the environment, you see, because that addresses people's needs.
People are probably more susceptible to hearing the word when the world itself is in time of turmoil like the country is today. I mean, if we were all at peace and rest and harmony, it would, you know, people get into their comfort zone.
Oh, exactly.
And they don't want to listen.
Exactly.
You know, I've got TV to watch. I've got a ball game to listen to.
Life is good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got to go fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just go back and look at the period of the Judges with the Israelites. Prove that. You see, when everything was good, what happened to them? They forgot about God, you see. God allowed them to be oppressed by their enemies, and that's when they started, you know, calling on God again, you see. So, yeah. So, you see, what we have to understand is we do not have to have a favorable environment for the gospel to be spread.
Oh, most of the time, what we think would be a favorable environment is exactly the opposite.
Do what now?
Most of the time, what we think would be a favorable environment
yeah.
is exactly the opposite.
Exactly.
We work against it.
Yeah, yeah. See, we just had a family walk in. I don't know what they want, so I'm going to take care of that. So you know, we've got to stop thinking about in terms of, you know, we need to have this favorable environment, you know, by the government and everybody else around us in order for us to spread the gospel. You say, no, we don't. We just need to spread the gospel. You say, you know, where'd you get the friends that you have now? Where'd you get them from? God gave them to you, didn't he? Where'd you get the job you got right now? God gave it to you, didn't he? Okay. Where'd you get your house? God gave it to you. You see? I mean, where'd you get anything that you have? God gave it to you, and if you think otherwise, then you need to rethink. You see? All you have to do is ask Job about that. Okay? It all comes from the Lord. Okay? So if you lose your friends because, you know, you're trying to share the gospel with them, do you think that God can't give you some more friends? You know? I mean, you know, think about that. What if you lose your job? You think God can't give you another job? And maybe even a better one. I can testify to that. I've lost two of them in churches, okay? All right? Because the folks didn't want to listen to the truth. But God gave me better ones. You see? We just got to decide, do we have that kind of faith? Do we, you know, don't worry about what the environment is. Just do what he tells us to do, right? Yeah. Here it is.
He's going to change brothers, our fathers against sons, and mothers against your daughters, and vice versa. Yep. And people that's in your family, many times, are going to be the ones that give you this. Why did you leave? Why did you go over there? What's wrong with them folks? You know? They holy rolling. You know? All this.
Ongoing. You know, we've got to understand, you know, again, look at the environment. How many people were in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost? You see? How many? Yeah, there's estimates of anywhere between 120 to 150,000 is what, you know, scholars kind of, and the reason there were that many was because, you know, it was a feast of Pentecost. You see that many of the folks that were there for the Passover stayed over in Jerusalem. So you had not only the normal population, but you had extra people that were there that hadn't gone home yet. And their relatives were angry with them because they'd been there too long already, okay? You know, and so, you're there for 50 days, you know, and what do they say about relatives? You stay more than 3 days, you start to stink. I'm not talking about y'all, okay? You know? but you know, here they've been here for 50 days, right? And here they are, Pentecost, about 150,000 people, somewhere around that number, give or take, you know, a few, okay? How many got saved on the day of Pentecost? Only 3,000 out of 150,000. And then, you know, days and weeks later, we're up to 5,000 or so. Okay. What happened to all the rest of the 140-some thousand that were there? They didn't believe, did they? At least not at first. Okay. You say, well, what's the point? The point is, They didn't worry about that, did they? They didn't worry about the numbers. They just went and taught. They told people, you see, and people were saved. You see? And that's what we've got to think about. You know, your neighbor or your friends or your family members, they may not obey the gospel. That's their choice. You teach them anyway. Teach them and let them decide. You see? And if they don't accept the gospel, then that's between them and the Lord. You see? But at least you've given them the opportunity to hear the truth. Judy?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, that should take away from you the mindset that you think you should look at people to see if they're worthy to be taught. God said, plant seed.
Yeah.
Plant seed. Don't worry about the cross. That's my responsibility.
That's right.
You know? So it takes away that burden of having to choose of who is worthy to be taught and who is not. Just go out there. Whoever wants to listen to you will listen.
That's right.
And whoever doesn't, they will go their way. Just plant seed.
Yeah. We have to remember, and this is something that I focus on a lot in terms of sharing the gospel with people. Go over to Acts chapter 6 and look at what was taking place as Jesus was teaching his followers. Okay, these are people that were following after him, his disciples, okay? I don't know how many people he had at that particular point that were following him all around and everything. But at this point, he starts teaching some tough stuff here. You know, I'm the bread of life. You know, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life in you. You do what? John 6. Did I say Acts? I'm sorry. John chapter 6. Thank you. And so he's talking about, you know, eating his flesh and drinking his blood and, you know, and so forth. And what happens? Some of his disciples say, I think it's around chapter 6, verse 60, some of his disciples say, this is a hard teaching. Who can accept this? You see? And then you go down a few more verses. I think it's verse 66 there. Somebody check me, tell me if I'm wrong here. I think it's verse 66, and he says, from that time on, many of his disciples turned and followed him no more.
Yeah.
Right? Hey, guess what? Do you understand what's happening there? Some of them didn't follow Jesus teaching them, okay? So why should you think that you're going to be any different? You see? That some of the people that you share the truth with aren't going to believe, they're not going to follow. You see? I mean, they didn't follow him. So they're not going to follow us all the time either in terms of what we teach them. They're going to reject it. Okay? But I really like the next verse. Okay? What does it say then? After they turned and quit following him, Jesus turned to the 12, the 12 there and said what to them? Yeah. What about you? You going to leave also? In other words, look, this is the word. This is the way it is. I'm not watering it down, not one bit. You see? Jesus didn't compromise the truth because people weren't going to follow it. Neither should we. Our job is just to teach the truth. Okay? And let people decide for themselves. Go ahead, Ray.
The problem with all that easy to get into is that you don't have to look so hard to get there. If everything was having a good
position,
and we need to make sure we get hard for the Lord. So it is the key for us to be so alive and good.
Okay.
If it shows I'm sitting in the chair, I know I'm going to be there. I don't know.
One day or another. We ain't getting out of this thing alive, are we? That's right.
sometimes we didn't have the answer to God. And it's better.
That's right.
It's better to have everything, all of our ducks in a row before we leave here. But after we close our eyes, sometimes it ain't going to work.
Exactly.
But, you know, this thing also goes both ways. You know, I've heard so many people say, I've tried to teach them, and they were baptized, and then they fall away, and people get discouraged about mm-hmm. that. But the way I look at it, you don't even know how many you might save that you never know.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Don't count or try to keep a track record of how many people you help to be in Christ. Because, you lose some. But you may not even know how many you have saved.
Right.
Just by simply planting that seed. And I say that because I look at Carol, the lady that brought me to the Lord. She don't know to this day whether I was faithful or not. You know, I'll be forever grateful for her. I don't know where she's at, but don't count by your own vision of how many you have saved. This is not what the Lord wants you to do.
Yeah. Not about the numbers.
Mm-mm. Just plant the seed.
Amen. Right.
Yes, sir. What's your name?
My name is Marshall Perry. I live right behind y'all.
Okay. It's good to have you here, Marshall.
Here, Marshall.
Share with us.
Remember, like the Bible says, do more for others than do for yourself. Okay. And don't worry about what it's going to be in the end. And if you can change one, you can change the other.
One at a time.
I just try to do. Like, one day I was preaching to a lady in a bar.
Okay.
Because her husband didn't want to do it. Well, I don't know if people are sure now, but he sat there and everybody just kept listening. It shocked.
You've got to take opportunities that you have, you know, preach the word. Okay. But. You see, we're out of time here, okay? And I tell you, y'all just, man, okay. Obviously, we're going to come back to lesson 3 next week, okay? I want to encourage you to look at, you know, this next section here on the inside. Explain it and express it. You know, if you've been with us through this study so far, then one of the things that hopefully you're beginning to see through this is that this thing is starting to get personal here. Okay? Because what it's doing is it's calling on each one of us, you see, to really look at ourselves and look at what are some of the things that are keeping us from doing what we need to be doing in terms of sharing the gospel with people and such. You know, and I hope this doesn't scare anybody away from this, but rather encourages you to just take a good look at self and go, okay, what do I need to start doing in my life here could be making a difference, okay? I want to encourage you to go through, if you haven't already, go through and start, you know, working on this. That's your homework assignment for next week, all right? And we'll pick up from here. So make sure you do your homework, Miss Jean. All right, thank you all very much.